Hey, what's going on, everybody? Thank you for clicking that play button, as always. And we have a special guest here tonight. As always, we always have a really good guests. But we have comedian, podcaster, and bodega bouncer, Gasser Omonte, coming on the show. So without further ado, here we go. My man, what's going on?
What's good, homie? How you been?
Good, good. It's like it. We had technical difficulties last time. We were talking about this backstage, and I am so glad you decided to come back onto the show, and thank you for the second chance.
No, of course, homie. We out here, man. No worries.
Right, that's right. And just for the people who don't know you, go ahead and introduce yourself real quick.
Oh, yeah, man. What up, man? My name is Gasser Omonte. I'm a stand-up comedian, storyteller, podcaster, all of that other jazz. I'm from Brooklyn, New York, East New York specifically. And yeah, man, just out here chilling out with the homie Dan today. That's what we're doing, okay? Gang, right. Let's do it. Hell yeah.
That's right. And I was listening to your podcast, The War Report. It's a very good show. Like, I applaud you.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it, man. It's a good time.
Now, how do you know your co-host? Is she like related to you or?
Nah, man. No? Shalay was Sharp is incredibly talented stand-up comedian. She's from Atlanta. Yeah, man. We kind of just know each other from the scene. Me and her, you know, we get booked on a lot of shows around New York. And I noticed that, like, whenever we got on stage, like, neither one of us are, like, topical news stand-ups. Like, we don't really, like, do jokes about, like, the headlines. So, like, me and her would talk backstage and we'd have funny takes on whatever was happening on the news, but we never really covered it on stage. Okay. So when the pandemic hit, I thought it would be a cool kind of thing to like keep us sharp comedically since we weren't performing. And by the same token, as a stand-up, I always appreciate when I could do something that's fun and allows the audience to get to know me without necessarily giving away my actual stand-up because it takes so long to work on those jokes. So it kind of like fit that we kind of talk on the news, we riff on topics. And you know, it's a chance to kind of kick it with a comic that I respect a lot. She's really dope, man. She's done you can see on HBO's Two Dope Queens. She's done a ton of sets on Comedy Central. She most famously also had like an appearance on I believe it was Jimmy Fallon's show where she got the nickname Killmonger's mom. Cause she did like a fun riff off of like the Black Panther poster. So yeah, man, she's dope, really talented, and she hangs out with me every week on the pod. So it's good times, man.
Yeah, you guys have really good chemistry together. It's hilarious. I just wanted to say that.
Appreciate you, man. Yeah, man, it's dope, man. It's easily like one of the highlights of my week. It's a good time. Admittedly, like yo, push come to, I do the show if nobody listens, just because it's therapeutic. I get to talk to someone that knows more than me about life. Right. So exactly. Like, yeah, if I do that under the guise of a podcast, sure. Whatever allows me to do it. But thankfully we got a good audience that checks in on it. So much appreciate them kind of peeping it. They send in articles and you know, after we catch up with each other for the week, we talk about whatever, you know, those submissions were.
Yeah. Well, I was listening to one of your episodes at work today, and that's right, I listen to podcasts at work. And
the secret's out, Dan.
That's right. That's how I got to pass the time somehow. 8 hours is long if you don't. But yeah, we were listening to it, and you guys were talking about getting a booster, a vaccine booster shot. At Old Navy.
Okay.
Is that true? You get booster shots at Old Navy out there?
Not at all. Not at all.
I'm sitting here working. I'm like, really? What?
yeah, we get a little far in our tangents sometimes.
Yeah, that was hilarious. I had me busting out laughing. Everyone's looking at me because I work in manufacturing, and so we have earphones on.
Yeah.
So no one can hear what you're doing. All they can do is see you. And I'm just sitting there busting out laughing at my station. I'm trying to do my job, but I'm just like, I'm bent over just hysterically laughing. And it's like, this is great.
Yeah, I think we were trying to figure out like if like what fast food or restaurant or like places like that we'd like, if they offered a booster shot, we would trust them to make sure it was like on the up and up. Okay. So yeah, we ended up on like clothing stores and all of that. So yeah,
clothing.
Here we go.
That would be, yeah, that would be probably the go-to because they're probably the cleanest. They smell the
cleanest
anyways. Yeah.
They know what they're doing there, you know, so it made the list.
Yeah, you don't want to go to like a TGI Fridays and go, hey, can I get my booster shot?
Exactly.
Then we get a rum and coke, too.
Yeah, this is not what they're for. This is a different type of business.
That's right. But yeah, everyone out there, go out and check out the War Report. Those two are hilarious out there. Amazing chemistry. And yeah, it's like the comedy scene, though. You probably are like the most famous person I've had on this show. I'm going to say that. Oh, right,
rock
now.
On.
So, because you've been on like my favorite show on Comedy Central on This Is Not Happening. You've been on it twice, yeah. Actually. So,
yes, indeed.
What was that like? And how was that like coming up from just like doing stand up comedy and you're like now all of a sudden you're on Comedy Central?
Yeah. I mean, both the two experiences were very different, admittedly. I did them both pretty early on. I recorded the first appearance during my third year as doing stand up. Mm-hmm. Cause I was really, really green. The whole time out there, I was like, just like in awe of it, you know, I'm a fan too. Right. So like you in the green room area, you know, you're hanging out with people you idolize. They record, about 10 stories every day during that shoot. So mm-hmm. they do two, like five people shows. And then, they take, you know, like the best three stories and make them episodes in like segments. So like you gotta understand that like while I'm there, like A, I'm with like 10 comics that like I highly respect in the green room, on top of like everyone else that's just there to hang out that are other like dope comics, TV execs from Comedy Central and all of that. Mm-hmm. And like I've literally been doing no like clubs at this point. I'm not passed anywhere. I'm like doing bar shows and open mics. I was like a really like new comic. I just happened to do this one thing well, you know, I happen to tell mm-hmm. stories really well, but like as a stand-up, I was very green. So somebody noticed that and recommended me for it. I got lucky and got this thing. But yeah, I was just in awe the whole time and I was like real quiet. You know, I didn't really talk to a lot of people. Thankfully, a lot of the comics there kind of like are super friendly and made sure that I felt welcomed. Mm-hmm. And I'm highly appreciative of it. Ari in particular made it a point to make sure that I felt at home because he knew that like I was the green guy. I was the only guy on the show without a manager or an agent. So like there was a lot about it that like he knew like I was out of pocket. Shouts to Eric and Sam, who are two of the producers on the show. They made it a point again to make sure that I felt welcome, that people communicated with me clearly. But yeah, like it was admittedly like a scary moment that kind of like went over my head a lot of it. You know, I was just watching people that I idolized, that I was trying to be like being themselves around me. Yeah, it comes out like a year later. That's the thing that a lot of people don't know. Most of like Comedy Central stuff, it has like a big lead time. Like you're looking at like 6 months to sometimes 18 months out. Something recorded might come out later. So in this particular case, it was almost a year later that the episodes came out on TV and then online on YouTube uncut. Mm-hmm. Thankfully that following year, you know, it comes out. I start like getting a lot of like opportunity to do stand up around New York. So it was real helpful development wise. Second time though was fire though, because like at that point I kind of knew what was happening. I got to kind of enjoy that moment with my wife. You know, the first time I went there by myself and like, you know, I didn't know what the process was. Now I knew I could bring people, how I could handle the moment. So I got to bring my wife out. We kind of got to enjoy like being in a nice Airbnb. We got to eat at a nice restaurant and you know, she got to see like this thing that I'd been sacrificing for the last 5 years at that point.
Right.
So that was like real big for me. So both of them are big things in terms of like memories, but for very different reasons.
Right. Did you have this moment where you were just like, you just like took a deep breath and just like sat back and just said, I made it. Like, this is it.
This Nah, not at all. I still haven't had that. I still feel like I'm in it. I'm still feel like I'm grinding. I notice it on occasion that like, oh, I make a living from comedy more so when like, really young comics or like new comics talk to me. And I realized that like they're looking at me like they like idolize me or they're like, you know, they're like in awe a little bit. And I'm like, I'm just a dude. Like, I'm still working, B. Like, we're both at this Crown Fried Chicken, you know? Like, we both here together. Like, nice, you know, I'm doing okay, but make no mistake. Like, we still in the grind. So, like, yeah, when, like, I appreciate those convos. I try to be helpful. But they're also rewarding for me to let me know, like, oh, like, I have actually, like, accomplished some things. Right. So, yeah, it's pretty dope in that regard.
Right. Yeah. I was watching your stuff on YouTube and my fiance is like, why are you talking like that? I'm like, talking like what? And he goes, like that guy on YouTube. And I was like, I sat there and I watched your, I watched so many of your videos. I started talking like you. And I was like, oh yeah, I really am. I was like, oh shit. It was like, I just kind of mimicked it. And I was just like, oh wow. Like it was a good 10 minute interval where I was getting my inner gaster came out.
That's what's up, man. Hell yeah. I did a show once with my boy, Jeff Zimmerman down in Virginia, where he's from, right? We did like his album recording. Then like I opened for him for the two shows.
Right.
Then a year later, we come out, we co-headline a show together. And this woman walks up to me after the show and she's like, listen, I just had to come meet you because when you came here last year, my husband came here and you said a phrase that he has not stopped saying since, which was my G. So like, apparently like, I say, you know, like he's like been telling like his kids goodnight, my G's, ever since he heard me speak about it on stage. So she's like, I just want to meet the man and change my husband. Cause he, he's 40 years old. I didn't think he'd be picking up new slang. I had a comedy show, but she's like, I get it. I'm impressed. So yeah, we had a good time.
Yeah. It's crazy how you like, you just listen to something and then you just pick up on it. And then it's completely out of left field from your personality, but you just start saying it anyways.
Yeah, man.
Like, it's like me going all of a sudden just walking around going bong bong all the time. Like bong bong. A 40-year-old white man, I have no reason to say bong bong.
If the spirit moves you, man, do what you gotta do. So. Okay.
That's right. Now, how did you like get started into comedy? What made you say I want to be a comedian?
It wasn't intentional, man. I got promoted at work. I was a sales rep, selling potato chips for Frito-Lay. Got promoted to sales manager, and I realized that, like, you know, while I was really good on the route, you know, where I talked to like bodega owners and the supermarket manager, as a district manager, I was gonna have to like talk to like, you know, the five managers of the local CVS chains or whatever, or, you know, things like that. It was going to be more corporate. I'd have to do PowerPoint presentations. So I read an article in Inc. magazine about a bunch of CEOs that took stand-up comedy classes to get better at presenting. So that just seemed like a fun way to develop that skill. So yeah, took a stand-up class, 7 weeks at Gotham Comedy Club. And, you know, at the end of the classes, I was like, oh, I really like this. And, you know, it took like about a year or so after that for me to really get into it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, man, I've been doing stand up ever since.
Wow. Yeah, this is ever since like a, I always wanted to do stand up. I've done it. I've dabbled in it. Okay. We had a club out here. It was called Shooters. And they would do like a comedy night, like once or twice a month. And I would go up there and I did my 5 minutes. Now, I did it three times, the total of three times.
Okay.
Two times, I wish I never got on stage.
Okay. Why is that?
The first time I was a little tipsy, you know, and I was just like, you know, screw it. I'll try it. Like, one of the comedians didn't show up. So I was just like, hey, give me his time. So I just went up there and I pretty much just told like my life story, like not really a life story, but a simplified, funny version of it. And it killed. And everyone's just like, yeah, it was funny. And the guy was like, hey, do you want to come back like in 2 weeks and do another 5 minutes? And I was like, hell yeah. So I got up there the second time. And I like for those 2 weeks, I was rehearsing and writing down stuff. And then it didn't work. Like everything I wrote down that I thought was going to be funny didn't work. So I got like that really high. And then I got the really, really low.
Yeah.
And then the last time I ever went on stage, it was terrible. I don't think I ever recovered from like the downfall, like,
right?
The bad performance. I think I should have took some more time and then went back. But
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like the craft in itself, right? Like, I don't know, man. I feel like everybody should do comedy once.
At least try it.
Yeah, like, I think it's on a lot of people's bucket list. Mm-hmm. And in comparison to a lot of other bucket list items, it is one of the easiest ones to cross off. You pay $5 to some open mic show that, like, has a drink minimum, and you're on stage for 2 to 5 minutes. As bad as bombing can feel, you will survive. Yep. You know, so, like, you know, you don't die from it. So I feel like the risk reward is minimal. In turn, for those that, like, suck at it, which, being frank, will be most of you. I think it's important that, like, you learn that, like, oh, you're bad at this, and that's why this art form is beautiful and special. You gain an appreciation for it. You'll learn, hopefully, some stuff that translates to, like, regular work stuff, like, you know, presenting. And every now and then somebody might realize, oh, I'm actually dope at this and I love it. But the beauty of it to me is that it's such a, like, it's so pure, man. Like, anyone can do it. The barrier to entry is minimal, and all it takes is work ethic. Like, I sincerely believe that, man. Like, I don't necessarily know if everybody could be like Kevin Hart famous, but I do believe almost anyone can become a competent comic for a 10-minute set. It takes real work, you know, like to workshop jokes, consistently get on stage, be comfortable with the fact that you're going to bomb a lot early on. But I do think almost anyone can, like, work their way up to doing a decent 10-minute set. So, yeah, like, that's kind of why I dig it. It's like it removes all the BS. It's the job that's all about work ethic. You know what I mean?
Right. Now, what would you say for someone that lives in the middle of nowhere, in, like, a comedy desert, as one might say?
Yeah.
Like, what would you say to that person to try to, like, to do comedy? Like, would you, like, try to, like, do something online? Or would you just tell them, just like, hey, just do the road. Go travel.
Yeah. It would depend on one thing is what they want to do as in terms of comedy, right? Like, if you want to be a stand-up, yeah, I'm going to be real. Like, you probably won't get that done there. You could, it's going to take you a real long time to get the reps in that I get in daily in New York. It's just not likely. In every other way, though, if you're looking to be a comedic writer, if you're looking to be a sketch artist, a performer, you could do that right from your home, because there's nothing preventing you from getting the reps in. Almost every major school of thought comedically offers online classes now. UCB, The Pit, Second City, all of those organizations have sketch classes, improv classes that you could take from your home and then start your own team locally and get good at that, record footage, put on shows, all of that. The one thing that I think that you should consider moving for is stand-up. Just because you do need to, like, actively do the thing. And outside of New York, no other city gives you these kind of reps. There are other cities that have good scenes, thankfully, like, you know, Atlanta, Chicago, L.A., certain parts of Florida, Boston. But even them, like, none of them compete to, like, what we could do here. There's just too many shows. So, like, there's things that can go wrong early on in a career. Like, you might not gel well with a comic, and now you can't go to that club. That doesn't exist in New York, you know? Like, if there's a comic that you don't vibe with, there's 1,000 other places to perform. Just don't go where that guy is, and it doesn't inhibit you from performing. There's no, like, the politics get removed because there's so much space. So, yeah, you can just focus on getting good and being a good person and meeting people that are doing dope things and getting to know them and being inspired. So in that one way, if you want to be a stand-up, admittedly, I will, like, it's one of the few times I would say location matters. But in every other way, if you want to be a sketch artist, yo, just start shooting. I mean, there's some brilliant shit getting done on TikTok, on YouTube, that, like, regularly gets not only looked at, but people hired. You know what I mean? Right. So same thing with, like, if you want to be a writer, there's late night writers that have worked specifically from home only because of how good their writing was on Twitter. They literally wrote in the format of, like, opening night monologue jokes and would get hired. You could put your packets up online. Like, all of those jobs, while they're easier to do in New York and L.A., you can still get them from where you're from.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's funny that you brought up TikTok, because I was listening to Joe Rogan the other day, and they were saying something about TikTok is different in China than it is here in the US.
Really?
In the US, it's like it's just a bunch of like stupid people doing stupid stuff. And then, and then in China, they actually like acknowledge like intellectual awards and stuff like that. And it's really like deeper, like it's deep in like the Chinese culture. And they just listen and they just watch the American TikTok to laugh, I guess. They're just like scrolling through ours and just like, yeah, okay, not the serious stuff. Like, that's kind of weird. But yeah, it's I don't know. China and TikTok's weird. I don't know. I don't think I trust it.
Nah.
I'm on it, but I don't think I trust it.
I mean, I got nothing to lose. So like good. Like, yeah.
You really can't take nothing.
Yeah, like it is what it is. You're gonna find out that I spend a lot of time at my corner store. Like, I don't know what information you're gonna get from me that's gonna affect my life.
Right.
You know, hey, knock yourself out. You'll hack my email, see what my bills are, find out that I owe $200 to T-Mobile. Like, not, like, I don't know what, like what's the secret? Like, I don't, dude, go crazy. Like, I don't know. Like, take all my data. There's nothing to take. There's no information that, like, if you took it from me, is gonna damage my life.
Yeah, I was like, what would you benefit? Just be like, just having like spying on the average Joe that goes to work every day. And does this 8 to 12 hours and then comes home. I want to see what his wife looks like or something. I don't fucking know.
It's a very odd choice. I don't know, man.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they have nothing to do over there. There's a lot of people over there. Maybe they have nothing to do. I don't know.
Whatever they into.
Anyways, you said it says on your website that you are a bodega bouncer. Now, enlighten us. What is a bodega for people who don't know? Because the only bodega I know is from Half Baked when he goes in there and he tries to buy weed from the guy.
There you go. Yeah, no, nah, it's just it's just a big part of New York culture. Like, you got deli bodega culture here. It's just like a corner store where you get a lot of your shopping done. But in New York, in particular, they're like a big part of the culture just because of the layout of the city. Like, you got so many people living on each block that there's like times when we need something and we don't necessarily make a supermarket run because we're not all like in cars. So like corner stores, bodegas, delis, they're like a big part of our culture because they're literally on every block. Right. And they serve like that purpose of having like the essentials. Whereas like if you go to other cities and states, like the convenience store is like a 10-15 minute drive. And that's not far, but it's different. Like, I've never grown up like that. Like, no lie, on my block, I am next door to the corner store. I can cross the street to another corner store.
Wow.
And I can walk one block to three other corner stores.
Yeah.
Like, is within walking distance of one block, I can get to five stores.
Wow.
And they're all busy. They're all open. I've lived on this block in some capacity, whether in my current home or the home my parents own, probably for like 20 years, and all of them have stayed open. Like, it's not like this is like the new store trying to like cut into business. So like there is five stores worth of business within one block radius. Like, that is just completely different from other parts of the country. But in turn, it's just like it's just part of the culture. Like, your corner store people kind of get to know you. They kind of stock based on the local needs. And in my opinion, the part of the store that makes the store is usually the deli area where, like, they make sandwiches and stuff like that. New York, you know, we got, like, the chopped cheeses and stuff like that. I don't know. Like, when it gets really popping at my corner store, like, a line forms. So I've, like, established myself as the unofficial, you know, bodega bouncer. I keep the line in order, you know, make sure nobody's skipping places, you know. Make sure it's not reckless. Yeah, you know? So it's
no cutsies.
That's it. No cutsies. Admittedly, it's more of an aspirational title. I believe in it, you know? I'm going to add it to my LinkedIn page.
That's right. Yeah, you should. I was just like, bodega bouncer. That's interesting. I'm going to put that in my resume. No one's going to know what the hell it is. That'd be great.
It's on my business cards now. You know?
Right, exactly. Bodega bouncer. What is that? But it's a lot different here because I live in Michigan and it's a lot spaced out. I'm like 2.5 hours north of Detroit.
Yeah.
So it's like country around here. I mean, I live in a city, but it's not what most people in the world would say a city. It's okay. It's like a small town, but we call it a city here because we're not used to all this. Right. Yeah, and I have to get in my car and I have to take a 15-minute drive just to go get like a soda or something if I want to.
See, that's crazy to me. Yeah. Like if I'm driving 15 minutes, it's because like it's like 4 a.m. and I want a very specific thing. And I'm gonna still get that. Like, oh, like you want chocolate chip cookies at 4 a.m. that are soft baked. New York will have it, but that might not be at the corner store. You gotta drive for that. The corner store will have like the essentials. You'll get your Wise chips, you know, you get your drinks and you get your sandwiches, and then everything else is available, but after a certain hour, they're destinations. Whereas like in other places, they just shut down after like midnight or whatever.
Oh, okay. Yep. Yeah, I gotta leave like 20 minutes early if I want to hit the store before I go to work.
Yeah, that's mad.
That's like that's 40 minutes out of my morning.
I go outside, I yell, and the corner store guy just knows my order. He just sees me throwing out while he's opening up the gates. I just come outside like, yo, take care of me. And I come out half hour late and it's ready.
That's right. You convinced me, Gasser. I am moving to New York.
It's the place to be, baby.
Gotta be. Where I'm at is not, but it's peaceful out here, though. I can say that. It's really quiet.
Nah, that's dope, too, man.
Yeah, it's we can see the sky. Like amen, yeah. I can't see do the that. Sky, you know? You can't look at the stars and everything like that. So that's fortunate here.
There you go. You know, hold on to that. You know what I mean? We don't got stars. It's okay. We got people with stars on the streets here. Okay? Right. We got famous people. Those are our stars.
Right.
But yeah, exactly. No, we don't got no stars in the skies. I agree. I haven't seen any of that in years.
Did you know you didn't have to be a celebrity to be on the Hollywood Walk of Fame?
Really?
Star in there. You don't have to be a celebrity. All you got to do is have money.
Oh, yeah. Well, you could buy them, right?
All you got to do is buy one. Yeah.
That's what it is. I'm getting one next.
That's right. It was like, yeah, I'm going to save up. It's like, my star. Put it right next to Donald Trump's. Like, it's my star.
Oh, yeah. I made it.
Step on Trump's, and then I'll be like, hey.
Gang, yeah, out here.
That's right. No one got a star. I got a star. Nate, no one got a star.
What if I get 2 stars? Oh, are you capped at how many stars you can get?
I don't know. That's a competition. Because if I was rich, I'd have like at least 10.
Right. Yeah. Like you're this is my little area. This is my what do they call that?
The damn lovely block right here. You can't stand here. This is all me. This is all me.
Yeah, it's my
diamond. I got real estate. Right. Got real estate. There you go. Bong bong. There you go.
There you go. See? With the moment moves. See, I told you, bro. Hell yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Brought it back. That's right. But yeah, I want to thank you for coming on, Gaster. It's a great time. Great talking to you. Do you have anything coming up? Yeah, I think you have shows coming up, right?
Yeah, man. First, as you mentioned, check me out on my podcast every week. The War Report, hosted by myself and the homie Shalay was Sharp. It's me and Shy literally talking about topical news and also giving you updates about our lives as day-to-day creatives. On top of that, I'm working on my new hours called The Sugar. If you're in New York, you could check it out. It's part of New York Comedy Festival. So you'll be checking me out doing that on November 8th at 7 o'clock. And if not, you know, I'll be recording it sometimes early next year to release it as my next album. And also, if you want to check out my current album, Immigrant Made. The special that I shot independently is on Amazon Prime, and you can listen to the audio on most streaming services. I think it's on like Apple, SoundCloud, and all of that jazz. So, yeah, go crazy. Check me out.
Yeah, you debut at number one.
Yeah, I was number one on iTunes, Google, and also on Amazon Music Charts. Yeah. So, yeah, man. I hit the Billboard, too. Hit the Billboard Top 9. Yeah, man.
Wow.
Good times.
Congratulations, man.
Thank you.
What's it like doing a comedy album real quick?
Yeah, I mean.
Is it weird? Or are you just doing recordings off of shows?
I mean, it's a live show recording. So, it's like it's an event for sure. Because, you know, everyone there is aware that you're there for the album. So, yeah, essentially we pick a date. I did 2 shows that night so that I could have like stuff to cut from just in case I nailed the joke a little better in one show versus the other. But yeah, it's just a fun night. Like everyone comes out to kind of celebrate you. Your crew comes out, your friends, your fans come out, and you go through the material that you collected. I did a 7 and a 9 o'clock, and then afterward kind of picked out my favorite versions of each. and you know, put out a fun tape. But yeah, man, it's a lot of work, kind of just prepping the material, getting ready for that moment. So it means a lot when you get to do it. You know, it means you like kind of cemented a place where like you could write that kind of material. It's also a burial of the material in a weird way, because like once it's out, you know, if the album does well, you know, your fans know it, so you can't play that material again. So right. Unlike like a musician, it's in a weird way like it forces you to be creative again, because I can't do the hits. I got to go back to new stuff. Right. So is there, you know, for me, I just enjoy doing it because it forces me to move forward.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So it's you're not just sitting in a booth telling jokes and then pressing a laugh button.
Nah, not at all. Nah. Like if a joke did bad, it just does bad. So
yeah.
That's why you shouldn't do them that early on in the game. Because, you know, like it'll show. And right. You got people that definitely like add laughs to the jokes or whatever. But I feel like that's noticeable because like you're not laughing when you're listening to it. Like it doesn't translate. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, when you see that person perform live, everyone has a bad set. But if you see them consistently bombing. Mm-hmm. Like how come the jokes worked on the tape but not on here, you know, like it just won't match. And
Right. Also
people come out, like not just fans but like your peers. So like when you do these tapings, if you notice that like there's no comedians in the back wall hanging out supporting that comic, that's because that comic isn't out there doing the work, you know. So no one's like there to like, oh yeah, this is dope, this is a moment I'm here to celebrate because I've been in the trenches with this guy. You know, right. So if no one came out, like it'll show in the taping, you know. So there's a lot of little clues that like admittedly might be subtle to like a fan, but they're out there and people notice when the work isn't getting done.
Right. Exactly. But all right. I want to thank you for coming on again. I don't want to take up too much of your time. Busy, busy man, everyone over here. Go ahead and check out his podcast, The War Report. It's hilarious. One of my favorites. It's on my playlist now. I downloaded everything. It's on my playlist.
Appreciate it. Brother, hell yeah.
That's right. And thank you again, guests, for coming on. Everyone, thank you for clicking that play button. And thank you for all the comments that rolled in. Sorry I didn't get to them. But we'll see you next week. See you guys later.
Have a good one, y'all. Peace.